to the Wall Tower, United States versus Wall Tower. Mr. Sandberg.
Good morning, Your Honors. Craig Sandberg on behalf of Stephen Waltower, defendant appellee in this case, appellant counsel. Before Your Honors, there's probably two issues that I think I want to address most particularly. What the trial judge did, sentencing judge in this particular case, in using the conduct that the jury specifically acquitted him of, in making his findings before actually entering the sentence, he indicated that he was giving credibility to one of the witnesses, Mr. Waltower's girlfriend's testimony.
But an acquittal is not a determination of innocence. It's just a determination that the government didn't prove its case beyond a reasonable doubt. So it's entirely consistent with guilt, isn't it?
It's not entirely consistent with guilt.
What are you talking about? Of course it's consistent with the guilt. You can be guilty even though a jury says, well, not proof beyond a reasonable doubt, right?
Well, and I understand that.
And what the jury thinks by a reasonable doubt is maybe they think you have to be certain.
Right, and that is one of the reasons and the problems with using that acquitted conduct.
What's the problem? The jury has found that the person is not guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, but the standard of proof, the burden, is standard of proof is different at sentencing. So the judge applies the lower standard and makes a judgment. There's no necessary inconsistency with the jury verdict.
Well, the using of the acquitted conduct and the problem with its use is that we know in this particular case that the jury thought at length about the charges. And so the jury may have found that, although they're not given the opportunity to say specifically, we believe he didn't do it, the judge is saying that I believe, despite the fact that the jury didn't agree.
No, despite the fact, the judge is applying a different standard.
Well, I understand that, but I think under the facts of this specific case, the as applied.
It's like saying O.J. Simpson shouldn't have been found guilty of wrongful death in a civil case because a jury had acquitted him in a criminal case, right? The same point.
Except that liberty interests aren't at stake.
It's the same point. You're saying whenever there's a jury acquittal, that means there can't be any further adverse consequences to the defendant because that might be inconsistent with what the jury thought.
Well, I understand, Your Honor, and I think in the briefs I pointed out that I don't believe that the case law in this case, including the Supreme Court case law and the background in the sentencing guidelines makes this, under the facts of this case, an appropriate use of that acquitted conduct. As we know by looking at the guidelines, and had they not used that four-level enhancement.
You're just quarreling with you think that proof beyond a reasonable doubt should be required in sentencing.
I believe that in this particular case, because the judge gave credibility to
Why in this particular case? Why isn't that your general position? You say liberty interest, right?
Right.
So you say you don't think a person should be deprived of liberty based on a finding of preponderance, the civil standard. You think it should be proof beyond a reasonable doubt. Well, so why don't you go the whole hog and say, you know, that's unconstitutional to allow sentencing to be based on a preponderance?
Well, my interest is in my client, and in this case,
yeah,
specifically.
But you can't make an arbitrary argument. You can't say, well, I don't want to win the other cases because they're not my case, and because my position would be absurd if I pressed it to a logical extreme, right? You tell me what the difference is between your position and a general rule that you've got to have proof beyond a reasonable doubt to take away a person's liberty.
As I pointed out in the brief, I think that the background on the sentencing guidelines as well as the Supreme Court case law makes it so that in consideration of the Apprendi issues that when you're going to be taking away someone's liberty interests, as in this particular case, because of the sentencing enhancement for a level, increases his sentence to an area that exceeds the statutory maximum for the felon in possession, which is what he was convicted of.
That's true in cases where there's no acquittal, but the judge makes a determination of relevant conduct or something that results in a very significant enhancement in the sentence.
I agree, Your Honor, that that's what happens at times.
How is that case different, right?
Well, I would have to know the specifics of what the framing of the sentencing
was. What if it were a hung jury? Would that make a difference to your argument?
You mean if the jury hung on all counts or hung on three counts and convicted on one?
Sure. You can have that case if that you prefer.
Well, I don't think that would be a whole lot different, except that we wouldn't have the jury having spoken.
A whole lot different. So suppose it's hung on these three counts. Is the judge then permitted to make a finding by a preponderance that he was guilty of those three counts or not?
Well, while I personally don't think it would be appropriate, I think we haven't had the jury speak on those particular counts and say
when they can't decide to convict the guy.
Okay.
So they must have had doubts, as you point out.
Well, using this,
how is that different in some intelligence sense?
Okay. Well, trying to make this sound intelligent, I'll do my best. When someone is found not guilty or acquitted of the conduct, that may mean, as Your Honor pointed out, that it means that the government simply didn't meet its burden. And we know that that is what, at a minimum, happened. However, that may also mean, and because the jury's not given the opportunity to speak specifically about this, that they found that he didn't do that. And because of that very issue of not having that information from the jury.
Right, so you don't know, so you ignore it, as with the hung jury, and the judge makes his own judgment based on the applicable standard.
Right.
Anyway, we get your argument.
Okay.
So the
other issue is related to the motion to suppress as to this statement, and I think that it was plain error in this particular case for that.
Okay. We won't forget. Okay. Thank you. So, Mr. Rodney, what do you want? Mr. Rodney, I'm sorry.
May it please the Court, Renee Rodney on behalf of the United States. As Your Honor indicated, during appellant's opening argument, completely permissible for the district court to consider acquitted conduct, which in this case the district court found clearly established that the defendant possessed the gun in connection with his drug trafficking. He credited the testimony of the defendant's girlfriend, who testified at trial and was subject to cross-examination, and he found that the drugs that were recovered by the Chicago Police Department were the defendant's drugs. So based on those facts, he correctly applied the enhancement under Guideline 2K2.1B6, which led to a four-level enhancement.
Was the defense in the gun charge different from the defense in the drug charges? Or was it the same defense across the board, and this is
the
one of those split verdicts?
The defense was the same, that Mr. Walter claimed that he did not live at the premises and disavowed ownership of the gun and the drugs.
Okay, so this isn't one of those cases where we have a different defense on the discrete charges. It's sort of the same broad-scale attack against all the charges, and the jurors just split the difference?
It appears that's what happened, but all of the contraband was found in
all
one
in the
place,
same place
in this
right.
bedroom. Mm-hmm. Correct. As for the appellant's suppression argument, that was not an argument he raised below. He's waived it. He's failed to establish good cause as to why it was not raised in the district court. And by presenting it for the first time on appeal, this court should not review it for any error. And even if good cause was shown, there's nothing in the record to support his position that Mr. Walltower was not read his Miranda rights before he gave his post-arrest statements to Officer Greenwood. So, in fact, appellant concedes that Officer Greenwood read the defendant his Miranda rights before taking that statement. If there are no other questions, by the court for the reasons I've stated and for the reasons set forth in the government's response brief, we ask that you affirm the conviction of the defendant and his sentence. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Rodney. So, Mr. Sandberg, would you like another minute? Do you have anything further?
Very critical, Your Honor.
As to the plain error argument that we had as to the suppression, I think that in this particular case there is evidence of good cause for raising it, because this is the exact type of statement that should have been raised in the trial court, because this is the statement that the officers testified about specifically, and that presumably the jurors relied upon in deciding that this is a felon in possession. So I respectfully disagree with Ms. Rodney that there was any intentional waiver of this issue. I think it should be reviewed plain error and reversed in a new trial on this. And as to the issue of the relevant conduct and acquitted conduct, there was a survey that had been done back in 2010 of district court judges that talked about, I think there were 900 or so surveys that were sent out, and two-thirds of those were responded to, and 16% of those who responded thought that acquitted conduct shouldn't be used at the time of sentencing. And that's the results of survey of United States district court judges January 2010 through March 2010, which is a United States Sentencing Commission June 2010 report. And if Your Honors want me to supplement the record, I'd be happy to do that, but it's not part of the lower court's record. That's all I have. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Sandberg. And you were appointed. Well, we thank you for your efforts on behalf of your client.